531. Nissan, believe it or not, and welcome back to Pacific Mornings with Aggie here on 531 PI. 8 minutes past 6 o'clock. Well, this morning we open up our show with the Deputy Prime Minister, Carmel Sepoloni, who's joining us live over the phones. With that, I say talofa and welcome to the show this morning.
Talofa lava, Aggie.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Look, we're just going to start off with some, obviously good news because you recently had just come back from Samoa celebrating the 61st, celebration of the independence. Would love to know, as a daughter of Samoa, one of the highlights and really, where is the status of our relationship at right now with Samoa?
Oh, certainly the highlights were being involved in the formalities and getting to witness the Samoan culture expressed through the independence celebrations, the march, everything that unfolded there, the honours that were awarded to the amazing Samoans that deserved and were being bestowed the honours. So, yeah, it was pretty special. I also got to host a reception up at the New Zealand High Commission, and so a number of Samoans there, including the Prime Minister of Samoa, but also my family, Aggie. So it was quite personal, and it was just beautiful to be back in the island.
And I mean, were you able to, even though with the hosting of, why you were there, where is our relationship at the moment, though, with Samoa?
Oh, really good. And so, of course, got to have the one-to-one bilateral with Prime Minister Fia Mei, someone who I respect a great deal, the longest-serving woman politician across the Pacific, and, the first Prime Minister of one of our Pacific homelands. And so, of course, got to have a one-to-one catch-up with her. Also got to have a catch-up at a dinner hosted by her with her Prime Minister Rambuka and the Deputy Prime Minister of Tonga and Deputy Prime Ministers of Cook Islands and Samoa. And so we had lots of opportunity to talk about the things that matter to the Pacific region and just to strengthen that relationship. I suddenly walked away from Samoa feeling like we had done that our relationship was as strong as it ever has been, if not stronger.
Yeah, no, I love that. Look, thank you for sharing, I suppose, a very special part of who you are as a Samoan too. I mean, look, we want to come back here, Carmel, and, of course, talk about, I'm sure you're very happy about this, the new law on child support payments for sole parents has passed. So, of course, that means giving some families an extra medium $20 a week. Can I just maybe ask as to the data behind this and why you felt like this was something that needed to be passed?
Okay, well, I've known about this for quite some time. Yeah. I've been a sole parent. I've been on benefit. And it's discriminatory. If you are on a benefit but you are in a relationship with someone else and you have an ex-partner paying child support, you get it. But if you were on a sole parent benefit, then you didn't get that passed on. And so instead the government basically took whatever child support was paid and used it as a way of subsidising your benefit. So that was discriminatory, and it meant that, a whole lot of sole parents, mostly women, and their children were no better off. It also didn't help the relationship with the paying partner because, of course, the paying person is like, well, what's the point of paying this when my kid's not even seeing the money? And so it didn't help the relationship either between the parents and the children. And so this will mean that the median gain is around $20 per week for about 14,000 sole parents, I believe.
Right.
But it'll be more for some more of those parents. And, I'm hoping too that it'll act as an encouragement for the paying parent to actually pay because they'll see that it is actually going to their children.
Oh, as always. When does this actually come into effect, though, Carmel?
It comes into effect on the 1st of July. And so it has been a very complex piece of legislation to do, but it comes into effect this year. It actually lifts, a number of kids out of poverty as well, because of the additional money that will be going into those households. So there'll be a lot of benefits. I'm going, I actually think there's more than 14,000 sole parents that benefit from it, but I'll get back to you on that number.
Awesome.
Aggie.
To education, though, I want to ask, of course, I feel like, yes, maybe parents are probably the happiest that there may be no more strikes due to primary teachers who have actually voted to accept the latest Ministry of Education collective agreement offer. Can I just ask firstly, though, why does it take so long, though? Why has it taken so long to get to some sort of settlement?
Well, we've been moving the whole time that we've been in government, and so there certainly has been shifts and improvements to the pay and working conditions for teachers across the last, 6 years under us. But keep in mind that under the previous 9 years, barely any shifts were made. And so we had a lot of ground to make up for. And, you know, we can understand why the teachers are feeling the pressure, given that when we came into government, they had 9 years of basically inaction and no support for improvements to their terms and conditions. And so we've moved. This is not the first time that we've moved, but we continue to move and respond to the needs of our teachers. We respect them, Aggie. We know that they do a hard job. We want to be able to meet them where they are at, but it is a process of negotiation. And the reality is that despite the fact that we respect them and we want to meet them where they're at with their terms and conditions, we still have fiscal constraints. Yeah. And so that's why the negotiations sometimes take so long.
Yeah, Kamala, I want to ask a real serious question because I know a lot of talk has been going around and we know it's the year of elections, whether or not the government itself is in a bit of a shambles. You know, we're seeing stories and stories upon stories with certain MPs within the government. We've got Stuart Nash, Kiritapu Allen, Jansen Eti, and even the latest here with Michael Woods and this whole debacle of airport shares. I mean, what's happening within the government at the moment? Because we feel like, you know, if we want to be able to trust what's happening,
We all wish these things weren't happening.
Yeah.
It's like any employment situation, but way, way more public. And these things do happen sometimes, eh? And the reality is we still have to get on and govern. And the rest of us are doing exactly that. We love our colleagues and we don't see them, like to see them fall from grace like we have done recently with Michael Wood. And, you know, there's a process to go through now, and that the Prime Minister's made his call about what needs to happen for them now. And in the meantime, though, the rest of us actually get on and do our job, which is exactly what we're doing. You know, people rely on us to respond to their needs and to do the policy work that needs to be done and to make the changes that they are waiting for or needing to be made. And so that's all we can do is get on and do the work. And nice. That's what we're doing.
Awesome. Finally, I want to ask Kamal, the King's Birthday Honours List, it's always great to see our Pacific people thrive and do well. I mean, of the 15 Pacific people, are we expecting to see more numbers increase? Because I think there was a list of about 182. 15 seems like a small number. Would we have more people to represent from our Pacific people?
I think if we reflect on the time that we've been in government and the number of Pacific people that have got honours, we'll probably find that there's been a significant increase of our Pacific people receiving them. I was particularly proud of Dame Tuwila Percival in this honours round. You know, she's such a humble woman who has just got on and done the mahi, and I'm well deserving. And so I'm really proud of all of them. And I think that if we reflect back, we will have seen a massive increase in the number of Pacific people who have been recognised for their service over the last 6 years.
Nice. Kamal, as always, I do have to ask this because I'm going to ask every politician that comes through. Still confident of you guys still being in government this year?
Absolutely. And that's what we're going to be working hard to make sure of.
Nice. As always, great to catch up with you, Kamal. Really appreciate your time this morning.
Okay, then. Thank you.
No worries. Take care.
See you.
That, of course, is Deputy Prime Minister Kamal Sepuluni joining us quickly this morning. And that's usually every Thursday, isn't it, Producer Levo? So it's always good to catch up with her. At 17 minutes past 6 o'clock, if you missed that interview, you can head to our 531PI Facebook page as we head back to some music. Kalandi, no stopping us right here on 531PI. Good morning. That's Ella Fanson, and welcome back to Pacific Mornings with Aggie here on 531PI. 10 minutes past 7 o'clock, Health Coalition Aotearoa, they've welcomed this announcement from the government to crack down on disposable vapes. Vape shops near schools or marais and restricting descriptions of product flavours. We ask, of course, will this actually aid in eliminating the use of vapes for young people? So joining us to speak more on this matter is spokesperson Lei Tutufunga. With that, I say Malole Soifua, and welcome to the show this morning.
Oh, Malole Soifua, Moa, thank you for having us.
Yeah, great to have you, Lei Tutufunga, because, you know, we have had you on before. I know you guys, you know, with Hapai Te Hauora, the you know, advocating for people to, of course, become smoke-free. So, I know I said it in the introduction, Leitul, but your thoughts, though, again, on the government's announcement on vaping. Happy?
Yeah, well, these are really, it's in the direction that we want it to move towards. We were hoping that it would be a lot more stronger. So addressing the current situation at the moment, where we have a lot of vape stores around schools already, so addressing that, and also increasing that from 300 to, you know, 2 p.m. Radius. So that it can also capture the other places as well. So, you know, just to also recap that our tamariki and our rangatahi, they also travel within the spaces as well. So if you think about our rec centres, our sports clubs, our playgrounds, sports fields, cricket courts and so forth, that's where they are. So, you know, we would have wanted the extension to also include those areas too. And any kind of significant landmarks, like our Māori landmarks, like our maunga as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean, a lot of times the worst part of this whole scenario is the mere fact that there is that many vape stores, you know, that are so accessible. I feel like they are in every single dairy that I go past. And that, you know, so you're sort of just questioning as to why it even had to start off in that first respect. So now to have to try and backtrack and you know, put in this little sort of restriction. what are you hoping, though, from the government? I mean, not for it to just, I mean, you know, we're in a year of election, so I'm just wondering whether or not this is just a little appease for people.
Yeah, so we can't take our foot off on, you know, we can't take our foot on the brakes. You know, this is the time to really do some bold action. And so what we've heard from our community during the consultations of the regulations, so it was around, you know, huge support around reducing tobacco being sold in communities. And they're also saying if we're looking at seeing only 600 retailers, then we should be seeing the same production with our vape stores too. Absolutely. They also talk about the appeal of the vapes as well. You know that the industry have used all of these great tactics and marketing ways of making them look really attractive, sleek, you know, lollipop type colors. They've got these added devices in. Like my niece has shown me, you know, she's got like some kind of like a pointer to her vape. Wow. You know, so the appeal is huge to our young people. So it's really great that they are looking at that. And if we had the same thing like standardized packaging for tobacco, we want to see the same approach for vapes as well. And then as well as including the labels, having simple labeling. So again, these, I want everyone to be more aware of these kind of tactics that the industry are playing in, and that, you know, our young people are finding this really attractive. And if they are finding this really attractive, it means that the industry is actually having their way.
But is it, Leitu, is it really a matter of just changing the description of a vape? I mean, should we not be looking at changing the attitudes of the children towards having to vape? Like, I mean, you know, it just feels very, I don't know, like just to change it. I mean, a child will still know whether or not it's mango ice, sweet berry to another, just a normal, to be being called berry. I just find it very like, silly.
Yeah, I go back again to the tactics that industry have used, you know, glorifying all of these, you know, like what you mentioned, those names of those flavors, you know, standardized packaging. What do you see on the tobacco smokes right now?
Pretty much, well, it just says, you know, smoking will harm you. And then you've got pictures of it'll hurt your lungs. So I've seen plenty.
Yeah, so the same thing. But I also think you're right, Aggie. This is also about there are many, many ways that we need to support our young people. And it's also about that kōrero and tālanoa with our young people and getting to the root of the issue. You know, we've seen this through COVID. And we've also seen that the impact of the mental health of our young people. So, you know, it's about understanding what is the core issue as to why our young people are taking up vaping. Because vaping, this tool is just a coping mechanism. It's about understanding, you know, how can we support you? What is really happening and what is on your mind? Because we want them to be amazing people, right? We want them to thrive in our communities, do well at school, do well within their craft and really hone it. So if we, like you said, if we are able to have those talanoa, but at the same time, talk about protecting our young people and using these current mechanisms within the regulations that are coming forward.
So yeah, with the regulations and the restrictions that the government have announced, do you then, the big question is, do you feel like it will stop young people from vaping?
I think if we do our very best, it can. A lot of people have been talking about how we are able to, you know, why don't we look at Australia? You know, and moving it towards a prescription method. In our situation for Māori and Pacific, we don't have the best access to prescription medicine.
Right.
There are so many barriers like transportation, like even paying to get there to the doctors, even before reaching the counter. So we need to be able to fix that issue first in order for that to really work well for Māori and Pacific.
Okay. Do you feel then, I mean, you know, the government's very much big on saying that they're a transformational government, that to be like Australia would be the best way? And I understand where you're coming from, Leitu, in regards to we need to try and get our people to the actual pharmacy to be able to be prescribed these medications. But I just sometimes feels like that may be just a bit of an excuse. Should we not be transformational enough if we just want to stop the smoking? Look, let's just get rid of the smokes. Let's just get rid of the vapes. Can we not go that far? Is that too far?
I think we can go that far if the government is really, really bold. There is always more that they can do. And so, you know, like I said, that these are the this is the direction that we're wanting to move into. We are waiting for a report to be released from the regulations, and then that will kind of outline how the implementation of reducing tobacco, you know, reducing the nicotine, and then a smoke-free generation, as well as looking at reducing the amount of vape retailers around schools and marae. And we're hoping that those areas can be extended to what I had mentioned before. You know, our young people are in the travel through town centres.
Absolutely. No, yeah, no, and that
and
is so
all
true.
All of those other places.
It is. It's absolutely really true. So can you share with us, because I know you're a big advocate for this, what are the actual risks of vaping and why young people should not be encouraged to do it?
Yeah, so vaping is a tool that can be used for them to stop smoking. And, you know, and if they choose to use vaping, just like the whole suite of tools, like the lung, your patches, the gum, vaping is also one of them. We don't encourage vaping for people who have never smoked before, and especially our young people. And so, you know, what we do know is that it has a massive impact on their brain development. And, you know, I go back again. It's about them to be amazing young people, to thrive, to do so well, to get all of the good gain that they need as a young person in order to, you know, make that transformation into a young adult. So there is more and more research developing. We haven't got enough research in terms of the longitudinal research, you know, but that is currently happening. So we need to make sure that, you know, our young people, if they didn't need this device, this vaping device in the first place, they never needed it before.
That's right.
And so we need to have that talanoa, that kōrero with them around, hey, you know, check in. What's happening with you? How are you feeling? Do I need to do more? And how can we support you? So that's one of the other things that we need, that we've been advocating for, is that there needs to be more support services around young people who are wanting to get off the vapes. Currently, nicotine level is 50 mg. We have advocated for 20 mg. So Think of a young person who has never ever smoked before. And then they take in nicotine at this level. So once again, anything that is not good for that they didn't need in the first place, they never needed it before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with Health Coalition Aotearoa, though, you guys are set on reaching, you know, New Zealand's goal to be smoke-free by 2025. Are we on a good path?
So we are tracking for none Māori, none Pacific. We're not tracking for Māori or Pacific.
Right.
So we need to do so much more. And vaping is part of the conversation. We need to, you know, it's great that we're now seeing only 600, we've gone from 6,000 retailers selling tobacco. Our community have said, no, we want 600 and less. We want to see the nicotine levels reduced to 0.8 mg in cigarettes, so it helps people transition and quickly get off the smokes faster. And a lot of our community are very supportive of a smoke-free generation. So anyone who was born before or after 2009 will not be legally sold cigarettes. So it's really important that we've got these mechanisms in place. And, you know, we need to see, you know, our champions come out too. A lot of our whānau and ainga have been saying, hey, too, why haven't we done this? Why haven't we done this sooner? I expected this to be done before. So, and then lastly, we also need to back our ainga as well, who are wanting to quit. You know, so if you are thinking about quitting, that's all good. So, you know, support that person, get them connected in with their Stop Smoking services. We've got some awesome chatbots. We've got the Tua Hine chatbot, the Māori chatbot, as well as the Tane chatbot, and we've also got the Pacific chatbot, Ola Ola. So, you know, you're able to connect in and then be connected in with those Stop Smoking services.
Leto, beautiful to catch up with you. Really great insight, and look forward to, I mean, like, come on, community. Great to see that, you know, everyone is stepping in, wanting to see a smoke-free Aotearoa. So thank you again for all the hard work that you are doing. Appreciate it.
Maloa people, thank you for having me.
No worries, Leto. Whaftaiti lava. That, of course, Health Coalition Aotearoa spokesperson Leto Tufunga. If you missed any of that interview, then you can head to our 531PI Facebook page. As we head back to some music, Bibal, this is Tawara Nights right here on 531PI. Good morning. Malalei, and welcome back to Pacific Mornings with Aggie here on 531PI. 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, this week, we've been highlighting the Pacific achievement within our communities, and this morning, we are continuing that trend. So joining us this morning is Dr. Edmund Fehoko, who has become the first Pacific lecturer to work in the Department of Human Nutrition at Otago University. So he's joining us now, and with that I say, Maloa tau mai pōpōngini. How are you doing, sir?
Very much. thank you, Aggie, for the opportunity, and quite blessed to be on the show this morning. And very cold here in Dunedin, but it's a blessing to be on, on a Pacific show.
Love it. And yeah, of course, I mean, what a move to be able to go down there to the chilly south and, of course, live there in Otago, because you have become the first Pacific lecturer for the Department of Human Nutrition there at Otago University. I mean, congrats on that. I mean, what's the journey been like to have to lead up to this?
Oh, it's been quite humbling. As a born and raised Aucklander and being surrounded by my community, my family, my people, and then take the leap to move out of Auckland wasn't easy, you know, praise God, and also from the support of my wife and my family, my daughter, who are keen and happy to move down to Dunedin, opened up the doors of opportunities for myself and also for my wife as well, who's also become the first Pacific Engagement Advisor for the Library Services here at the University of Otago. So it's quite heartening that that we have these fancy titles, becoming the first, but hopefully becoming the first will also open up the doors for many of our Pacific young people to come through in the University of Otago.
I love that. I mean, Edmund, you know, when you think about, I mean, there is a plethora of work that you have done over the years, you know, with studies and projects and data analysis and things like that, specifically for our Pacific people. Why, though, this field, though, that you've decided to pursue in regards to nutrition?
It's a very interesting field. Obviously, food is central to our Pacific cultures. And at a time where where cost of living is on the rise and everything is quite expensive. Our Pacific cultures, we still see the importance of food in our cultural practices, in our ceremonies, and also in our everyday lives. So it's quite critical at the same time that we explore how we can make healthy eating or healthier food as a central part of our everyday lives, despite the many challenges that we face in our Pacific communities. At the same time, as you've mentioned, I touch on other topics and research areas as well, which all kind of correlate and have a certain distinct relationship with nutrition as well. So, an example is my current study on infertility and assisted reproductive technologies. Food plays a pivotal role in whether our Pacific couples may have an opportunity to bear children one day.
I love that, Edmund. I'm just wondering because there have been recent reports there with Otago University, right, in the sense of quite a few courses being shut down, staff being let go. I'm like, I'm amazed because nutrition must then be an amazing course that it is able for you to be able to teach this. I mean, how's that feeling? I mean, you got enough students within your class who are taking this?
Well, yeah, I'm not too sure if I can comment on it, but there is fear at the moment, but at the same time, with fear comes opportunities, and
Sure.
so I'm hopeful that we, like any other university in New Zealand as well, going through these issues will eventually see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Awesome. Is there quite a few then Pacific students that have taken up your class too then?
Absolutely,
Yeah.
these are growing Pacific population, and it's quite exciting to see our Pacific students also come down from Auckland, and see Otago and the University of Otago as a home or place to pursue education. So, at the same time, it's a lovely area where there's a lot of touristy attractions that you can attend to, and I honestly believe that the South Island, in particular Dunedin, where will become the hub for Pacific communities. Just up the road here, just an hour away, is the hub for the Tongan community, Oamaru, which is quite exciting to see a truckload of our Tongan people reside in Oamaru as a place of home.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of this because we do know. I mean, I've got family down there in Oamaru, and it's beautiful. The fact that, Tongan is the second most spoken language there in Oamaru, you would never have thought. But yeah, have a shout out to all the Tongans that are coming through to hopefully study with you. What does one sort of, if they take up your course, what type of field of work would they be able to go out and get after they qualify from this course?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the obviously the most obvious ones, you can become a nutritionist or registered nutritionist. You can become a dietitian, but more importantly, you become a health coach. And health coach kind of expands the opportunities to work in and engage with our Pacific communities. So these are a lot of opportunities in health, but also my hope here at the university is to encourage and push our Pacific students to pursue postgraduate, particularly into masters and also PhD programs, which will allow more numbers of our Pacific students pursuing education to make a change in their families and also the communities they serve.
So, in other news, though, I want to ask, the government has sort of announced that it's considering prohibiting online betting, though, Edmund, outside of the TAB. And I know you've done work around this. Excuse me, I seem to sort of all of a sudden have a frog in my throat. But I know that you've done work around this. Are you happy with the announcement? What are your thoughts around this?
It's quite an interesting time. My concern or my disappointment is the lack of consultation, in particular with our Indigenous and also Pacific communities, who are the biggest users of, and possibly will become the biggest users of, online gambling one day. And my hope was that the government, DIA, and other gambling services could do a better effort into engaging and consulting with our people to see what the benefits and also the harms that online betting will have on our Pacific communities. I understand that the economy, the money that the government will receive in terms of and boosting the New Zealand economy as a result of online betting and also other gambling activities. But in what, how, you know, you weigh that with the possible harms, and unfortunately, our people will be more at risk in developing gambling harms than any other population group here in Aotearoa.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because, you know, as we know, we live in this cost of living crisis, and often we are touted as the people who who seem very desperate, and hence why we go down these paths in regards to gambling. I mean, in 2023, are you seeing any improvement though? Are we, is it still just a very big issue for our Pacific community, or are we looking better in terms of data?
Well, no one has really captured data into Pacific gambling in terms of, you know, some really quantitative or science or evidence-based data. In terms of whether we've seen a shift, I think we have, in particular with our young people who may not be so much interested into gambling activities like our parents' generation have. But at the same time, with the rise of technology and online activities, I think it will create some sort of challenges with our Pacific communities moving forward. At the same time, we can't always, it's two-sided. And so our Pacific communities, we must do our part to really see what's important and central to our communities. And I'll give you an example. These certain things in our cultural practices, and in particular Taupins as well, and I can speak on behalf of the Taupins, that we need to relook at our own cultural practices and say to ourselves, are we really making an effort to increase the livelihoods of our own people? Or are we showcasing our cultural practices and try to generate money, try to make money from gambling activities where we know for sure we're losing way more than we're actually gaining?
That is a good conversation to have, Edmund, which you really do bring up something very important there. I'm just wondering, with everything that you're doing, now that you've got your fingers in the nutrition side of things, just for us to wrap up this morning, Edmund, what's your message though to our communities this morning? Because I want to touch on the cost of living for us, as like you say, you can speak on behalf of our Tongan people. What are the ways that we can actually do better in this area? Because we would not want to just have to keep showcasing our culture through, you know, drinking, gava, and all of those things, and yet not actually be learning and improving our lives. Have you got anything to say on that?
I guess I'll touch on one point, and this is a concept that literally just came into my mind as you were speaking. This idea around intergenerational budgeting, and my hope is that budgeting is seen as this very individualistic construct, but for Pacific people, because we live in intergenerational livelihoods and households, that is critical that we provide budgeting and support for our people. In an intergenerational perspective. And that way, we cover all aspects in our culture, we cover all aspects in our families that we care and serve for, which will also cover the nutritional values of our food that we eat, and also the monies that we earn.
Yeah, I like that. And so, will that definitely be something you'll touch on within your course and the teachings that you'll do?
Yeah, so currently my teaching at the moment, next semester I'll be exploring cultural global perspectives into nutrition and how we can look at Maori, Pacific, Aboriginal communities, Native Indians, Middle Eastern cultures, and how they value nutrition. There is no Tongan word for nutrition other than kailele, but kailele also has this kind of stigma that it's not for us. Healthy food is not for us, and yet in the Pacific, we are surrounded by healthy foods, and so. And yet the healthy food that we see in the Pacific, then here in New Zealand, is quite expensive. For example, mangoes, they were for free in the islands, are now worth gold here in New Zealand. So these are the challenges that we face here in Aotearoa.
I know. Would you like to see a call for, of course, healthy foods to be a little bit cheaper here so that it is more accessible to our people?
Absolutely. And I think that's if we can improve that, we will see drastic outcomes in terms of lowering the health stats within our Pacific communities, and also the possibility of seeing an increase of educational achievements and attainment and with our young people as well. Because breakfast is the number one meal to ensure that our young people will have some sort of nutritional value. So if they're going in with steak and cheese pies and a can of Coke for as a washdown, then we obviously know for sure that that's not going to help and benefit our young people moving forward.
And I don't want to start a conspiracy theory, but do you believe sometimes often that they don't want to change it to obviously keep our people suppressed in a certain way and, of course, still be at the bottom of the ladder of having to, you know, we probably outweigh anyone in regards to statistics of diabetes, you know, high blood pressure and all of those things. I mean, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, you just look at the geographic communities that we live in, you know. I'll give an example. When I was living in Otahu, in 1 kilometre, we saw every single fast food outlet that was out there in New Zealand in 1 kilometre in Otahu.
Yeah.
And it was rare to see, you know, some sort of healthy eating places in comparison to the other rich areas that, you know, Parnell and North Shore.
Yeah.
And similar aspects across many other of our cities. Hence, Dunedin also have that kind of tension as well, where we see Pacific with low socioeconomic incomes are more at risk and more at, you know, they see more of our fast food restaurants than any other population group here in these big cities. So that's a government issue, that's a local board issue, but at the same time, our people need to voice their concerns as well.
I like that. I know it's a bit unfortunate, eh? Sometimes I feel like I'd probably take the $1 bread over the $10 avocado because that is literally all that you can afford for your family. But look, Edmund, we just appreciate, you know, you obviously have done some amazing work over the years. And I'm going to be finishing up from work soon, so I don't know if this will be like pretty much the last time we'll get to chat. But I'm just very, very proud of all the work that you've done, especially for our Tongan community. We just want to wish you well in this new season for yourself, for you and your wife, of course, and your beautiful bubba too. So, look, we just want to say mālo apito to every time you've come on the show. You've just given such great insight and wisdom on the topics that we've spoken about. So I just want to say thank you again.
Thank you, Aggie, and God bless.
Yeah, no worries. Again, that is good friend of the show there, Dr. Edmund Fehoko, becoming the first Pacific lecturer to work in the Department of Human Nutrition. Exciting times. Now, look, if you feel like you want to be someone who wants to learn a little bit more about that, attend Otago University. I'm sure Edmund would be plugging for you, especially our Pacific people, to come through and study at Otago University. Love the Dalanoa. Let's head back to some music. If you missed that interview, 531PI's Facebook page is the best place to head to. This is Layback. Who doesn't look forward to Soul Food Sundays? And here we are talking about nutrition, and now I'm hungry. A big boa would be good, eh? Right here on 531PI. Good morning.